Hi, I'm Yaakov Katz, and welcome to another episode of the Jewish People Policy Institute's Inside Analysis on the State of Affairs in Israel and the Jewish World. On today's episode, we're going to look at the rising tension between Israel and Iran ahead of a possible response and retaliation from the Iranians, maybe by Iran itself or via proxy against Israel for the targeted killing of an IRGC general from the Quds Force in Damascus last week. We also talk on this week's episode with Haley Seifer, who is the CEO of the Jewish Democratic Council of America. Haley is working very hard to drum up support among Jewish constituents for Joe Biden, as well as for some of the other Democratic candidates that they are supporting in this round of elections upcoming in November. We talk about the wane in the Democratic Party's support for Israel, some of the voices that we're hearing there from Nancy Pelosi, Elizabeth Warren, and others. But there's a lot on our agenda today, first with Haley Seifer, then to our panel with Dr. Sarah Hirshhorn and the former an ambassador and former director general of the foreign ministry, Avi Gil. We're going to talk about what's happening throughout the region. Here we go. Haley, thank you so much for joining the JPPI podcast. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So there's a lot going on, obviously, ahead of November, the elections, presidential elections, but also for the House and for the Senate. And you guys at JDCA recently came out with the some endorsements that you've made. And maybe we'll start off with just the latest news. You are supporting or endorsed people who are contending against Cori Bush and Jamal Bowman, two high prominent members of the Squad, in the primaries to basically unseat them, right? These are some of the greatest critics, I would say, of Israel, and definitely since the beginning of the Gaza war. So explain to us why these two people were specifically chosen to try to take down in the 24 cycle.
Well, JDCA has made a lot of endorsements in the cycle. We've endorsed all of our Senate incumbents. Of course, we've endorsed President Biden, Vice President Harris, and we've endorsed many House candidates. We expect this cycle will endorse more than 100 candidates, just as we have the past two cycles. But you're right, we did endorse for the first time challengers to Democratic incumbents, Wesley Bell, who is going up against Cori Bush in Missouri, as well as George Latimer, who is challenging incumbent Jamal Bowman in New York. And we've endorsed them because our mission is to serve as the voice and political home of Jewish voters in support of Democrats who share our values. We only support Democrats, but we don't support all Democrats. They have to share our values. And we decided that those two Democrats don't share our values, including our strong support of Israel. And it's not necessarily just us. We don't think that they share the values of the vast majority of Democrats. So they are outliers in our party. And we think with these strong challengers that they can be defeated in their upcoming primaries.
So you talked about values of what your organization, you're the executive director of the organization. But I read with great interest the piece you wrote a few weeks ago in the foreword after Senator Chuck Schumer's speech. The headline was, Schumer spoke for the majority of American Jews. Now, here in Israel, obviously the Schumer speech was looked at slightly differently, right? As, you know, here is this prominent, very pro-Israel historically politician, very active within the Jewish community, who comes out and basically, again, on the Israeli narrative, calling for Prime Minister Netanyahu to be ousted and to be removed from office. And the Prime Minister himself even felt compelled to respond to that. So maybe explain for us, because I think people don't fully understand, right? What is it, you know, they look at Democrats, they see one big picture. It's much more nuanced than that, right? Chuck Schumer can call for Netanyahu to be replaced or for new leadership, but that doesn't make him anti-Israel.
Absolutely not. In fact, if that's the case, then the vast majority of American Jews are anti-Israel, according to that false definition. Chuck Schumer has a long record, decades and decades of support of Israel, both in the House and in the Senate, now where he serves as the Democratic majority leader. His speech, which was about 45 minutes long, and I do encourage folks to take a look at the whole thing before they decide that it's about any one headline, it covered a lot of ground. And he really started by talking about his strong support of Israel. And he said that he was speaking on behalf of the silent majority of American Jews. The op-ed that I wrote used polling to demonstrate that, in fact, he was. We, as American Jews, have a deep emotional attachment to Israel. We see in the numbers that those numbers, which are now in the 90s, went up, actually, after the horrific attacks of October 7th. He strongly condemned the horror and trauma that Israel has gone through both that day and since, given the murder and hostage taking and the injuries and frankly, just the trauma that terror has inflicted on Israelis. He stands with Israel, as do the vast majority of American Jews. But we also know that one can be pro-Israel and criticize the policies of the current Israeli government, including its conduct of war. And polling demonstrates that as well, that a majority of American Jews believe that you can do both. Both can be true at the same time. And it appears, given the protests with hundreds of thousands of Israelis in the streets going back to January of 2023, and which have resurfaced recently, that many Israelis agree. They are in the streets demonstrating out of their love of Israel, but also their belief that this current Israeli government is not pursuing policies that are in the best interests of Israel. Now, Chuck Schumer was clear that the problem was not Netanyahu alone, right? He cited this the first problem, Hamas, the second as President Abbas, whom he called on to go, the third as extremists in the Israeli government, and the fourth is Netanyahu. He did call for elections, but he said elections in Israel as this war winds down. And he also said that it was up to the Israeli people to decide who their leaders would be. So by no means was he deciding for Israel in terms of its next government, but he was encouraging Israelis to start thinking about the fact that perhaps they need a new government.
And probably a lot of Israelis, as you said, are thinking about that. But, you know, coming from him, I think it touched maybe a bit of a raw nerve. But I also, and this is what I wanted to explore, is we do hear what other Democrats are saying. Now, of course, the spectrum is very wide. But just in the last few days, there's been comments by Elizabeth Warren, a senator from Massachusetts. There's been comments by Nancy Pelosi, the former Speaker of the House, talking about signing on to a letter saying maybe there should be a calling essentially for suspension of military supplies and aid to Israel. I mean, it feels at times that maybe we lost the Democratic Party here in Israel?
Absolutely not. I think your focus should be placed on the other side of the aisle. And we'll get to that in a moment. But, you know, we shouldn't group these actions all together. They're all different. They do require some nuance. As I described, you know, no 45-minute speech or, frankly, letter can be summarized in one quick headline. That letter that Nancy Pelosi signed on to called for an investigation into the tragic killing of seven World Central Kitchen aid workers, and said until that investigation is final that U.S. military assistance essentially should be paused. I will say that JDCA, our organization, doesn't support freezing or conditioning or cutting or restricting. Again, you can use any word you want. U.S. military aid to Israel. Neither does President Biden. When he returned from Israel, and keep in mind, he went there 10 days after October 7th as the first U.S. president to do so during wartime, he requested $14.3 billion in an unprecedented amount for Israel. None of that money has has gone through because it's been Republicans who have played games and politicized it, first in the House, then in the Senate. And it's been obviously over 6 months now that that assistance hasn't gone through. Regardless, the administration has found a way to ensure the flow of military assistance has continued. And there have been many arms shipments and sales and other actions taken by this administration to stand by Israel, both in its right to self-defense, as well as the actions that it's taking in Gaza, because the president stands with Israel. He's made that very clear. The vast majority of Democrats stand with Israel. And what we hear from the administration, as the president said in the State of the Union, not only is that, but also we have to do everything we can to get the hostages out and to get humanitarian assistance in to Gaza. Now, recently, Trump, who's running, as we know, he is the head of the Republican Party. He's running for a third time for a second term. He recently spoke to Israel Hayom. And, you know, I'm surprised you haven't asked about that, but I'll just go ahead and talk about it, because he gave this long interview to the Adelson's newspaper in Israel, where he basically called on Israel to stop what it was doing in Gaza. And not once did he mention the 135 hostages in Gaza. Not once.
No, by the way, I'll just add to, you know, there was a tweet the other day that I saw by Bill Ackman basically attacking Biden for not doing anything, or for the administration not doing anything on the hostages. I happen to know firsthand, just from backroom involvement. I mean, this administration, the president has spoken to hostage families sometimes more than the Israeli prime minister has spoken to hostage families.
And the hostage families are here today to meet with Vice President Harris, also a very strong supporter of Israel. And listen, everyone's entitled to their own opinions, but not their own facts. What I'm saying is fact. This president has done more to stand by Israel before October 7th, and certainly after October 7th, than we could ever expect from a U.S. president. If anything, a lot of the delays here in terms of assistance and even additional support has come from Republicans. They have politicized and paused that vital assistance from going through. Regardless, the president has done what he can to ensure that there's still the flow of military aid, and he's done everything he can to help with those negotiations that did release over 100 hostages in November, and is continuing to push all the parties to try to get the additional release of hostages.
So let's talk, though, a moment about Trump, because he made some comments the other day, again, questioning the loyalty of Jews to being Jewish or to the state of Israel, because, as we know, an overwhelming majority of American Jews do vote for the Democratic Party in the mid to high 70%. And Trump made these comments of how, you know, they are, I'm paraphrasing here for a moment, but they should question, you know, are they Jewish? Are they loyal? What are they doing? I mean, what do you make? And this isn't the first time that he's made these comments, right? He's made them before. He made them in the last election. He made them when he was president. Now he's making them again. Does he really think this is the way to get votes of American Jews?
I gave up long ago trying to understand Donald Trump, but a few things are very clear. He clearly has disdain and animus toward the vast majority of American Jews, because yes, he has called us uninformed. He has called us disloyal. Today, he said we need a talking to, as if, you know, Mr. Dictator on day one wants to talk to us. Well, every time he talks to us, he invokes anti-Semitic tropes, right? He has said we are not loyal to Israel, right? Invoking a dual loyalty accusation that ADL has said repeatedly is a form of anti-Semitism. So it is important to realize that he clearly has contempt for American Jews. And what I have said is the feeling's mutual. Listen, nobody has a lower approval rate among American Jews than Donald Trump. It is in the low 20s. I would be surprised if he gets more than 22% of the vote in this upcoming election, because every time he speaks about our community, He invokes anti-Semitic tropes, and he speaks with a degree of animus toward us. He clearly is still so resentful that moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, something our organization supported, we're not disputing, Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, that did not win him over Jewish voters. Because later, 3 years later, he said he did it for the evangelicals, right? Because everything to him, according to his own national security advisor, John Bolton, who recently in the New York Times said, Donald Trump's support of Israel is not guaranteed in a second term. It's all about what's good for Donald Trump. So deeming that he would have more votes among evangelicals than he would among Jewish voters, and about that, perhaps that's the one thing about he's right. He said, oh, I didn't do it for the Jews. I mean, but it's not just that. It's his emboldening of right-wing nationalists. It's the fact that, you know, I don't know what's in his heart, but anti-Semites think he is an ally, right? Anti-Semites believe he is an ally. That's why over 100 right-wing extremists, dangerous right-wing extremists, ran as Republicans in the 2022 election. And we see extremists running again in this election, including him. So it's important to realize that actually, you know, Jewish Americans were never going to support him. But every time he continues to say anti-Semitic things, his support just goes down. And why weren't we going to support him? Because he doesn't represent our values. We're not loyal to him. We're loyal to our values, including the future of our democracy and reproductive rights, the top two issues driving the Jewish vote in the last election, which will likely be among the top issues driving the Jewish vote in this upcoming election. And on those two issues alone, he could not stand for something that was more the opposite of where Jewish voters are if he tried. And he tries, right? He continues to brag about overturning Roe v. Wade. And by the way, in every state where abortion has been on the ballot since, the Democratic position advocating for abortion access has won. I was just in Florida over the weekend where they're going to have abortion on the ballot. I predict that it will win there as well, because even in red states like Kansas and Kentucky or Ohio, the abortion access position draws people to the polls. They are fighting for reproductive rights. And in the Jewish community, this is an issue on which it transcends partisan divides. 88% of Jews believe abortion should be legal in all or some cases. So we don't support Donald Trump for many reasons, including the fact that he spews hate toward us, but also on the basic policies, whether it was in his last administration or what he hopes will be a next administration, he stands for the antithesis of what we stand for. And we're going to do everything we can to make sure he's defeated.
You mentioned that you just came back from Florida. You had told me offline that you were also traveling to other states, Arizona, I think it was. You're going around to what we would call swing states, right? I'm guessing Michigan, you'll be visiting there at some point, maybe. The Jewish vote, which is always, you know, a tiny percentage of the overall vote, but in some of these states, whether it's Michigan, whether it's Ohio, or, you know, definitely Florida, it's significant and it makes a difference, right? So how important is that going to be in this upcoming election?
The Jewish vote should not be understated. We are 2% of the population. We're about 3% of the electorate. Our turnout rates on average are higher than the average American turnout rate by about 10 or 15 points. And we tend to live in states that determine the outcome of elections. So you are right. In all the critical states, whether it's the presidential or the Senate races in this cycle, whether it be going from west to east, Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and then for the presidential, Georgia, the Jewish vote absolutely can make the difference. It's also a critical part of a winning Democratic coalition. If you look at Joe Biden's win in 2020, which he comfortably won the popular vote by over 7 million, when it came to the Electoral College, looking at Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Georgia, which ultimately decided the outcome of the election, it was just over 110,000 votes. In all three states, the Jewish vote, but not just the Jewish vote, the Jewish vote for Joe Biden far exceeded those numbers exponentially, more than double in most states. So it is, it's a critical part of this election. Another piece of facts that are just important to consider is just how close our elections have become, right? That election demonstrates it, but also these Senate races in Nevada, the last Senate election was determined by 7,900 votes. So when we have such a divided electorate, having support among a key constituency like Jewish voters who turn out at higher rates and who overwhelmingly vote for Democrats, again, it's a key part of a winning Democratic coalition, and elected officials know it.
And they got to work to make it, make them come. And that's where you also come into the picture, I guess.
It is. It is. And we get out the vote for Democrats who share our values. While we've said this a few times now, while the largest portion of Jewish voters are supporting Democrats, the fastest growing portion of the Jewish electorate are actually identifying as independents, or they're just not identifying with either party. So we are not taking for granted how that segment of the electorate is going to vote, including many of our younger voters, who in the same way that they're not affiliating with a synagogue or a denomination, they're not affiliating with a party. And we are doing everything we can to pay additional focus and attention on that critically important segment of the electorate in this election.
Very, very interesting. Well, Haley Seufer, it was great to have you on the JPPI podcast. Thank you so much. Very enlightening, very interesting, and very, I would say, lively. So that was also a good part. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
So, Avi, I want to start with you. We have everything that's happening, obviously, in the region, and the most tense moment at the moment seems to be with what might happen with the Iranians, right? We're fearing and we're waiting for a possible response from them for that killing of the Brigadier General Zahadi, who was the head, one of the heads of the Quds Force and responsible for the coordination between Iran and Hezbollah and Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. You know, this could happen at any moment. No one really knows how it's going to play out, but what's your feeling of how imminent is this potential wider conflict with the Iranians?
Well, the answer, Yaakov, is very much depends with the magnitude of the Iranian retaliation if it takes place. And according to various sources in Israel, outside Israel, it looks imminent. And so the question is the magnitude, and also where it would be launched from. It's also important whether it will be launched from Iran or from other place. I think that the big question, and I'm not trying to belittle the Iranian retaliation, but the big question would be the way Israel and maybe even America are going to respond to that retaliation, because the response will tell us whether we are deteriorating into a bigger confrontation with Iran, and whether America is part of this deterioration.
So, you know, there's a wide spectrum, right, and of what they could possibly do. And like you mentioned, it depends where it comes from, what the target will be here in Israel. I think, like, for example, we both agree that if they fire missiles into Haifa or Tel Aviv, let's say Hezbollah does, Israel will have to fire back into Beirut, let's say. And then it's a very short path towards a larger war. But if, for example, the Houthis in Yemen again attack the naval base in Eilat, depending if there are casualties or not and what the damage is, that could be something that Israel can much more contain. But what's interesting, Sarah, is we've been after weeks now of President Biden, his top national security staff, basically blasting Netanyahu and Israel for its policies. And suddenly on Wednesday, The president says our commitment to Israel's security is ironclad. The Secretary of State basically repeats that and says the same thing. And in a warning to the Iranians, it makes it almost seem like the Americans are more concerned with what might happen than Israel, and they're changing their tone in what's happening. But this is a bit of a shift, no, in how, what we've been hearing out of Washington.
Yeah, I'm struggling myself to understand how the Biden administration and and obviously the members of the Democratic Party who are putting increasing pressure on the president and on the administration itself are reading these most recent events, which obviously threaten a much larger conflict, a regional conflict, one that draws in, you know, the major superpowers of the world. It seemed to me that up until Wednesday, so much of State Department policy was really being subordinated to the pressures of the national election in November. And we've seen a lot of, I think, what might be characterized as kind of virtue signaling by the administration on certain issues, not necessarily related only to the war since October 7th, but also other questions about settlements and Netanyahu's conduct that, you know, have come up again and again, and opportunities for the Biden administration to reassure some of their voters about their policies here. But I imagine that they are really concerned that, you know, a war with Iran affects the United States as well. And this is no longer, you know, sort of small potatoes that they can
contain
retain on the margins,
right?
Because it will directly affect U.S. policy. But it to me, it seems very unclear where the Biden administration is headed, whether they really are interested in a larger shift of policy, and, you know, certainly are receiving extremely significant pressure both from within their own party as well as their base for that, or whether this signals something new.
And Avi, I mean, you know, obviously you've been following this closely as well, and, you know a lot of the different players in the Biden administration, even personally from your years in government. They are fed up with Netanyahu on the one hand, and on the other hand, though, they seem to still care deeply about Israel. It's like, is it really just personal about Netanyahu and Israel they're okay with, or is it something deeper also just about Israel?
Well, I think that it is a mixed phenomenon. America has its own interests. Some of them are connected with the election year, with the political year, but others not so. I think that America doesn't want, for example, to deteriorate to a full-fledged war, and therefore that explains why they were quick to project their support and commitment to Israel. Because the feeling was that Iran may make the wrong interpretation following the critique America projected vis-a-vis Israel's handling the Gaza issue. So to me, this is the main explanation. Other than that, the Israeli performance in American eyes is damaging American interests in the region and in the international arena, irrespective of internal political issues, which has to do with the elections and with the Democratic Party.
I mean, speaking about the Democratic Party, Sarah, it's very hard to ignore the shift that's taking place there, right? I mean, someone like Nancy Pelosi, who signs onto a letter that calls to suspend military shipments to Israel. Elizabeth Warren, can't say she was ever the most supportive, but starting to talk about what Israel's been doing in Gaza's genocide. Gregory Meeks, who's the ranking member on the House Foreign Relations Committee, asking for clarifications about weapons sales to Israel. I mean, it does seem, and Haley in the interview, really tries to say, look, it's nuanced, it's a spectrum, you can't pull everyone together. And I get that. But, there's the Chuck Schumer speech, And she has a very interesting explanation about it, but it does, as an Israeli listener to everything, observer of what's happening, And as us Israelis, we're not, the average Israeli is not read into the nuance of the Democratic Party, like let's say someone in the U.S. might be who closely follows. It looks like an onslaught to some extent.
And while I agree that there is a spectrum, I think we need to be honest that the younger voter base has very different opinions and a different position on what the future of the party should be. And the younger members of Congress share in that and are bringing those forward into the halls of Congress. And the old generation that, you know, stood in solidarity with Israel with this ironclad promise towards Israel's security and future, I think are quickly being replaced by a younger generation with very different views. So for those who are, you know, looking at this from an Israeli perspective, it is very easy to flatten the distinctions between, you know, generational differences, regional differences, ethnic differences, you know, and the, you know, multivocality of the Democratic Party into this, you know, turn against Israel. I think we need to be careful, but I think we also need to be honest about where the trend line is going, not just now, but certainly down the road.
Avi, you know, you look at the Democratic Party and the polling does show that we are losing support there. And we're losing support, by the way, generally across America. The latest Gallup poll shows that a majority of Americans are kind of fed up with what Israel's been doing in Gaza, but Israel doesn't feel like it's done. Right. And it seems to me that this government, whether it's right or wrong, and put aside Iran for a moment, because hopefully that won't lead to something wider. But we have the Rafah situation, which is still not resolved. Bibi is bent on going in there. And even Gantz said the other day that Rafah needs to be dealt with.
Well, I think that the current crisis has to do with a bigger issue. And this is the inability of the current Israeli government to make bold decisions regarding the way to continue, to finish the war. Especially the government's inability to set the fundamentals of the day after. I think that this situation has various implications. One of them has to do with the way Israel is being viewed in the world, in countries which are traditionally sympathized with Israel, and in America and the Democratic Party. So I think that to your question, the way the Democratic Party is looking at Israel has to do with all sorts of trends and developments within America and the Democratic Party, but they are not divorced from Israel's performance.
Thank you for joining us today. You can find all our episodes where you get your podcasts. Please share widely and give us a 5-star review. We will see you back here soon.